15 minutes after 4 o'clock, Bullseye on the afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Enjoying the sunshine for now because apparently it's going to rain overnight and into the morning as well. But you know what? We'll worry about that when it gets here. And if it rains, well, a lot of people are going to be stuck inside looking for something to watch. And that's where our very next guest comes in. We've got Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us. Michael, as always, we appreciate the time. Last week, we spoke extensively about the Tiger King documentary. So fascinating, really kind of took the world by storm. And now we're hearing that a lot of people are binging on Ozark. For those that haven't taken the plunge just yet, explain why this is so incredibly popular and worth binging on.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I've actually had two or three people in the last couple days tell me that they just started watching Ozark specifically to binge. So obviously, yeah, it's been very popular. And I think that there's a lot of reasons going into that. First and foremost, I think that timing is a big one. There's a lot of people who are stuck at home when they're not used to it or have a lot more free time that they're not used to on their hands. And so it's a perfect opportunity to finally get into the show that a lot of people do watch and talk about as a new season is coming out and premiering on Netflix. So I think that's a big thing. But more than anything, it's just sort of a great bingeable show. I mean, as a Netflix original, it's kind of built that way. They definitely want to keep people watching as long as possible. But this one really kind of shares DNA with a lot of major TV shows that have come out in the last decade or so. I think there's certainly some bits of Breaking Bad in there, a little bit of The Sopranos, of sort of these crime dramas that have a family element to it. So I think that's a big part of it. And again, like just by virtue of being a Netflix show, it's made to be binged. So I think that that really helps as well. But more than anything in this moment in time, I think just timing helps a lot. That everyone's watching it. I myself have actually just started it, so it's certainly one of those easy, bingeable shows that's worth your time as we all kind of figure out what to watch throughout all of this.
In your mind, you said you just kind of began watching it. What in your mind makes it so fascinating? Because this isn't new. It's been out for a while. It debuted in 2017. It's now on its third season. But of what you have seen so far, what about it makes this so captivating?
First and foremost, I think it's Jason Bateman. I mean, this is the guy who obviously really made a name for himself in the last 15 years or so doing comedy. But, I mean, he is fantastic in just the little bit that I've watched. Very much playing a character that you're not used to seeing from him, and he really brings you in. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think sort of just like the question of what's going to happen is a big one. And I know that that sounds kind of basic and a simple explanation, but it's kind of like with Breaking Bad, like you're sort of waiting for all of these dominoes to fall and waiting to see, what is going to mess up everything as this sort of tough plan that this guy, this financial advisor who is trying to launder all this money for the mob, like, you're seeing exactly like when is it all going to fall apart, and that's kind of what sucks you in and what keeps you coming back episode after episode. So I'm excited to see which direction it goes in. It certainly got me hooked pretty quickly and pretty early on.
Love the idea. Love the story. I haven't started it just yet. I'm thinking about making the plunge this week myself, depending on how things shake out. So I'm very, very interested in diving in. All right, the Tribeca Film Festival was supposed to be a little bit later on this month. That, like many other things, has been postponed. The actual festival itself, I should say, has been postponed. But they're also planning on doing something with their films. What exactly is it that they're doing, and why do you think this is something that might potentially work in the future?
Yeah, they were one of the early festivals that kind of saw this coming and really started to take different steps. So they've started or will be starting on April 15th through the 26th when the festival was supposed to run. They will be doing a digital festival. They will keep their jury that includes director Danny Boyle, Lucas Hedges, Marty Noxon, amongst many others. And they're going to kind of just go ahead. You'll be able to, presumably on the Tribeca Film Festival website, they haven't quite revealed how, or how much, but they will be streaming a lot of these films digitally in small windows, so you'll be able to tune in at a certain time maybe and get to see a specific film. And there's a lot of worthwhile things to see. There's a documentary from Sean Penn, some new movies from people including Judd Apatow, and some featuring high-profile people like Drew Barrymore and Hugh Jackman. So there's a lot of big movies. Tribeca is a really big festival and kind of an early stop on the award season, you know, merry-go-round that we have. It's where some of those movies start to get bought and sold. So I think it's really good for the festival. Whether or not this continues, I think, is still kind of a question. It depends, I think, on how much money they can actually make on it, off of it. If there's a good audience, I could definitely see major festivals start to shift to a model similar to this. Obviously, keeping their you know, in-person events and screenings and sort of the big to-do around all of those. But it certainly opens up the possibility for cinephiles or people who just love these festivals to participate in them from wherever they are, and certainly opens up a new revenue stream for these festivals to survive. So I think that there's a lot of potential here for this to continue after the pandemic is over, but certainly a nice kind of distraction right now to be able to see some films ahead of their theatrical release and sort of partake in the festival from the comforts of our own homes right now.
Michael, shifting gears here a little bit and sort of looking down the road, I don't know if you had a chance to see this or not, but over the weekend, the next phase of Marvel movies seemed to be getting a lot of hype and attention. And in this phase, I believe included is Black Widow, the third Spider-Man movie. There's supposed to be a Doctor Strange sequel, a Thor sequel, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse sequel. If you had seen that whole list of movies within this phase, is there one that stood out to you and one that you're really excited for, again, in that next phase of Marvel movies?
I think the Black Widow movie is actually one that I'm very excited for. I mean, sequels to Spider-Man and Into the Spider-Verse, I think, are two really big ones as well, since those two series have been so great recently. But the Black Widow movie is one that I've kind of gotten more and more excited about. It has such a great cast, with David Harbour, Rachel Weisz, and Florence Pugh joining Scarlett Johansson. So I think, like, just those three joining her in doing a movie, like, got me really excited. So that is one I'm very excited for. But, yeah, I think the Spider-Man, particularly the Into the Spider-Verse sequel, that was such a great movie. I think it was now a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so I'm excited to see where they take that next and kind of what direction they go in. Certainly a lot of them still to come out, and they're kind of shifting some of these release dates. I know Black Widow is one of them. But yeah, that I think is the one that I'm personally most excited for.
We are joined on the hotline by Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, Michael, Modern Family, the run comes to an end with the series finale this Wednesday on ABC. Where does this sitcom rank amongst the all-time greats?
I think that's a tough question. I think it ranks pretty high. I think, though, if you're kind of judging it by some of, or next to some of its contemporaries, it's maybe a step behind a show like The Office, which is still you know, massively popular. But I think it's certainly up there. I mean, when this show premiered, it really had it was fairly unique for the landscape of TV. It really was a very, very fresh voice, and it carried that voice for a long, long time. It won a lot of Emmys, won a lot of awards for its actors, and certainly it, since it's been on for so long, has, like every TV show does, kind of gone into autopilot a little bit. I think, you know, at a certain point, you kind of run out of unique original stories to tell with the same characters, so you can kind of feel like you know, shows get stale. And so I think it's going out at a good time, but I think it's certainly up there. It definitely kind of defined the era that it was on in. It was very much a show that was kind of with social trends and just sort of like popular trends in general, whether that's technology or just like the people involved in it, that kind of thing. I think it's certainly up there. I think it's a really important one. But again, I think there's a certain like rank of TV show, I guess, a certain standard that there are shows like The Office or even some really popular cult shows like Community, which has just gotten on Netflix and is having kind of another run in the conversation. I think a lot of those may be remembered a little bit more fondly as the great TV shows, but Modern Family, you know, its long run and great ratings and all its awards certainly speak for itself. And I think it's definitely up in the upper echelons for sure.
Anytime you talk about a show that gives you that kind of longevity and that kind of success, the idea in this day and age will always be out there about the potential for a spinoff or maybe a couple of spinoffs. What kinds of potential do you think there could be for a spinoff or a series of spinoffs with Modern Family?
I mean, I think there's a ton. They could really pick any of the I guess they were kids when the show started, but they're all grown up now. They could pick any of the kids and kind of do a spinoff of them and just sort of have then, you know, parents and other characters from Modern Family pop back in. I know Haley in particular, Sarah Hyland's character, was having a baby the last time I watched the show. I think she's had it at this point. So that would be a pretty easy one. But really any of those kids would be an easy spinoff. The other thing they could do is something that shows like Blackish and The Big Bang Theory have done recently with their spinoff, which is go the prequel route. We could see what the Pritchett family was like in the 70s when you know, Jay was still married to his first wife and Claire and Mitchell were kids, and sort of like get this story from a whole different perspective. You could do it from the Dunphy family perspective in the same era. There's a whole bunch of different ways that they could do a prequel series. So I think there's certainly a lot of potential. It'll be interesting to see if any of the actors want to continue doing it. So I know that's kind of a tricky thing, is convincing an actor after 10 plus years of doing a character to continue doing that. But I think there's certainly a lot of potential. There's certainly still a lot of an audience for that kind of genre and for Modern Family. So I think it would be something to definitely keep on the table.
All right, Michael, one more thing before we get to the picks to click for this week. Virtual cinema is an idea that's been created to stream while saving local cinema that was highlighted in the USA Today. How exactly does this concept work, and do you think this has legs moving forward?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting concept, and this is a little different, first of all, than some of the movies that we've seen jump straight from the theater to on-demand in the last couple of weeks, like Sonic the Hedgehog, Birds of Prey. It's a little bit different than that. This is more independent cinema and movies that would be playing normally at like a local or an independent film theater. So the biggest way it's working right now is that a lot of chains, I know the major Alamo Draft House is doing it, Magnolia Pictures is doing it, and a few others. So a lot of like both production companies and independent theater chains are doing this, where you basically, they'll put out a schedule of films that will be, or that were supposed to be in theaters for a short period of time. So really low budget things. Maybe some things that are made by independent, local filmmakers, and some that are just like you know, small budget art house movies. They'll put them on their websites. You can buy a ticket for it, and then within an allotted time, you'll have the opportunity to watch that movie at home. And whenever the so-called theatrical window for that movie ends, that link will expire and you'll have to go find it through on demand or whatever kind of other regular means. It's a really cool concept. I think it's a great way to get some, you know, underexposed films, some of the really small ones that, you know, are not making a ton of money in a theatrical release or didn't really have much of a budget to begin with. It's a great way to support those kind of films. But more importantly, it's a great way to support the local independent theaters. You know, I live here in Chicago, and we have a great local theater called the Music Box that's been around for about 90 years, and they've been shifting some of their programming online. And it's great because it's a really nice way to get to see some movies that I may not otherwise get to go out and see, while also supporting a place that I genuinely love and love to support at a time when all of these theaters have their doors closed. So it's pretty unique. I could see this kind of the same way that the Tribeca Film Festival, if there's pretty decent money in this, if it's working and there's an audience for it, I could see this continuing once theaters open back up. But certainly for right now, it's nice to have even more options to add to the viewing slate.
Great stuff. Michael, let's close out with this week's Picks to Click. What should we be watching for this week?
Well, this Sunday, there is a lot of new TV returning. First of all, on AMC and BBC America, Killing Eve returns for its third season. If you haven't watched the show, now is a good time to binge through the first two seasons. It's pretty pulpy and fun, and a great cast. Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh are just fantastic, so excited to have that back. And a couple of premieres on HBO on Sunday. First, season four of Insecure returns finally. A really great comedy if you haven't seen that one. And a new show called Run premieres from Fleabag and Killing Eve creator Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It stars Merritt Weaver and Domhnall Gleeson as would-be lovers who decide to run away from their lives together, honoring a pact they made when they were teenagers. It's gotten great early buzz, and the trailers look great. So certainly some new things to tune into on Sunday night.
Good deal. Well, Michael, as always, we appreciate the insight. We appreciate the time, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Michael. Again, that's Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.